9 p.m. on the next Backstage Stories.
It is 8 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, not commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Education at the Crossroads with Basir Amchawi.
Good evening. Welcome once again to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basir Amchawi, and since it is Thursday evening, well, here we are. This evening, we want to do two things. First, we want to talk about what in the world is going on in public education in New York City. As you know, here on Education at the Crossroads for many years, I mean, the show at this particular point is in its 25th year. We've been talking about public education, what needs to be done, what are the problems, and here we are in 2022 with a situation that would be intractable, with the exception that we know that there are parents and teachers and students and community people who are, at this point, kind of fed up with what's taking place. And as such, it's going to be up to all of these groups to come together and begin to correct all of the errors that have been made over the last 20 plus years. When I talk about 20-plus years, I talk about the idea, the concept, the reality of mayoral control. That since the days of Michael Bloomberg, the schools, New York City public schools, have been under the control of the mayor. The mayor picks the chancellor. The mayor picks the so-called educational priorities panel. There's no board of education. There are no elected people on a board of education at this particular point. There are no democratically elected boards in school districts around the city. And we have a mess. We have a mess, and well, I guess that's what we're going to be talking about. What is the mess, and of course also what is to be done. Then we're going to talk about a jazz festival that's going to be taking place this Saturday in Harlem at Marcus Garvey Park this Saturday, September 24th, from 1 until 7 p.m. There's going to be a John Coltrane Festival taking place in, said Marcus Garvey Park. I just heard about it not that long ago. We determined that it was important enough to bring some people knowledgeable about this particular event, organizers of this event, to you. So that'll be done in the second half of the program. But first, we want to talk with two of our go-to parents, parent organizers, who've been active within the New York City Public Schools for years. And they are Brenda Walker and Muba Yaro Fulani. And we want to talk about what's actually happening. Schools, as we know, have opened. It is fall. We are in the midst of the equinox. And I think the weather outside knows it, because this evening into the morning is going to be about 49 degrees. Not what we've been used to over the last few weeks, few months. But this is where we are. So let's jump right into our discussion. Sisters Brenda and Muba, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Great, great, great. Always good to talk to you about what's taking place in regards to education. School has just opened. What do you see? What are you hearing? What's going on? Who wants to start? Brenda or Muba?
Go ahead, Muba. Talk about the mess we're in.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for having us once again to share with folks some of the truth, some of the facts that is happening within this miseducational system. I am Muba. We begin again facing the fact that the mayor is given 2 more years, although the governor wanted to give the mayor 4. He's given 2 more years to govern the school system that continue to fail our children. And as you stated before, and sad to say, we have to continue repeating ourselves. 22 years of dictatorship, 22 years of where you have one person having complete control of a school system of over 1 million children. You're looking at how many parents should be involved in the conversation. We continue to fight to change that. We believe that the mayor control should end. The school year has begun, as always, that they have the best words to say. They can speak this, they can talk the talk, but walk the walk is a different thing. According to the chancellor, this budget cut, the mayor, in fact, insisting that our schools should have this budget cut, major budget cut. And we know our children need so much resources to help them meet their academic needs. And he's claiming the enrollment is so much less in, we have 1,700 schools. He claimed 1,300 schools, the enrollment is so low that they cannot give that amount of money to these schools. And you know, we are saying there's so much need for other things in these schools other than having that number of students that you want to give that money for. There's so much other things that needs to be given. So cutting the budget because you don't have the number of students in the budget, I want to know, what are you doing with that money? Why isn't that money actually used for students that are in the building? We are so confused. And most importantly, we do not have anybody holding the mayor accountable for his decision making. We don't know. We just hear this is what he's doing, and that's what we are living with. We don't know what, how, when, and where is this money that was given to schools, where is it going? So many teachers were removed from their schools because, again, the principal is saying, we don't have the budget to hire the number of teachers, but our children continue to be suffering. And they continue to be suffering. And we need to find a way to hold the mayor and the chancellor accountable as to where the money is going, how it's being spent. If you are not going to give it to the school, where is that money going? Because we know that money could be spent in our children's education. So the school year have begun. The budget is cut. We are not seeing anything that much different. A lot of the COVID mandates have been lifted. However, we still have some parents who are unvaccinated and not even allowed to enter the building. And we are really just in limbo. We are in limbo. So the school year have begun, and we are still confused as to exactly whose school is getting what money and how is the money going to be spent. So that's my piece, little piece on how the school year has begun.
Okay. Brenda, why don't you chime in and let everybody know what you're seeing and what parents and community people are talking about. Brenda?
Yes. Well, you know, this is one of the reasons why, this is the main reason why we don't need mayoral control in New York City public schools. And we thought we had a chancellor that was going to also do right by us, but now we're seeing that's not happening. Just the mere thought of cutting the budget. And now that we're in this mess, this, the way this budget was cut is really not making any sense. And, it doesn't make sense. I don't understand how you cut a budget and then so many people are affected by it. You know, of course, that's not the song that they were singing in terms of who is going to be affected. But so as Mova said, this is a whole complete mess, and we're all in a state of limbo, not understanding what's going on. It just things are just not adding up and not making sense. This whole COVID vaccine, no vaccine, all the athletes and extracurriculars still do not have to get vaccinated, but you know, parents can't visitors can't come into the building if they're not vaccinated. But you know, this whole thing is not making, if they're not vaccinated, the whole thing is not making any sense at all. And then of course you just heard how the private sector can get they don't have to vaccinate, yet city workers do. So yeah, the mayor has his hands full. He should not have his hands in anywhere near dealing with this whole a public school situation. Because now I wonder what's going to happen with charter schools with all this money that they're now trying to also pull from COVID. Where's that money going to go? And the money that you've taken, you know, all the money that's being spent, how charter schools is being funded, is again taking away from public dollars that should be going to public schools. A mess. Complete mess.
Now, we know that there are several sources of money that have been made available by the federal government during COVID. You know, we're hearing, of course, about the PPP loans and how so many companies and individuals got these loans when they did not deserve them. And as a matter of fact, now the Department of Justice is actually going after people who fraudulently applied for these particular loans and in many instances got them. But then we also have the American Rescue Act, which was federal dollars specifically to go to institutions like schools to go ahead and shore them up based upon the fact that we had COVID. So, I mean, one of the things, of course, I guess that we need to do is there needs to be some kind of audit or some kind of accounting of what happened with all of these particular dollars that should have been received by the Department of Miseducation over the last 2 years.
And that is so true. You know, what is very frightening is the fact that so many of our parents are not aware of the crookedness that is taking place in this miseducational system. They are sending their children to school, of course, because we want our children to be educated. It's also a mandate, because if you decide, listen, this is not where I want my child to be, ACS will be calling you after a certain period of time. But so many of our parents are not knowledgeable of that money piece. And his money is what is really running our school system. Money. And they don't know the depth of that corruption. And I think if we were to get more parents aware of what is happening under mayoral control and the lack of resources that are given to our children, and I say our children meaning most of the time children of African descent, and of course we have our Latino children, the communities that are considered supposedly in poverty, if most of our parents would understand the power of who we are, when we get that information and demand that the mayor, this new mayor, because it's no different. We had Bloomberg, we had de Blasio, and it's continuing to be the same structure. Nothing different. If we could really get some kind of audit, some kind of someone to come on board or a team of folks to come on board and really investigate. What are we talking about? How many billions of dollars? Over 50, whatever billions of dollars our school budget is. If we can get an audit, and we are asking for that, we are asking even from Bloomberg's time, we want an audit. We need people to start checking where the money is really going. And yes, we know that a charter school has a whole set of money that is going to them, because according to what is said now, we have lost over 70,000 students from the New York City public schools. And when we say public school, we're talking about traditional public school. So that 70,000 children, where are they going? Majority of them are going to the charter school, in which case the chancellor and the mayor will say, well, if we have more students there, that's where we're going to want to put our children, public school money that is needed to the charter school. So this fight continues. We here now have to also fight against what is given to the charter schools when it should be given to our children. And parents need to understand, instead of moving your child away, you need to fight and make sure they get an equal opportunity to succeed under male control while it's here. So yes, it's a major, it's very major, very, very dissatisfying, very disheartening what is happening, very disheartening what is happening.
Now, two of the things that the mayor, Mayor Adams, and Chancellor Banks have been talking about since, well, right after the after he took office in January and then appointed David Banks as chancellor, they've been talking about two things. They've been talking about that 65% of black and brown children never reach proficiency in math and reading in the New York City public school system. The other thing they've been talking about is they've been talking about dyslexia. Mayor Adams is says that he is or was dyslexic and therefore had some learning issues early on, but of course he was able to go ahead and get some additional help, which enabled him to go ahead and conquer that particular disorder. Now, have you seen any programs, any sign of anything being done within the public school system to address either the 65% of those black and brown children who never reach academic proficiency and or special programs to deal with issues regarding dyslexia? Have you seen anything? I've got silence.
No, I'm just waiting at, in case Brenda wants to chime in, you know?
Uh-huh.
Again, whatever is being done, it is done in not in a magnitude, whereas we are seeing anything changes. It really isn't done in that way. You see, again, as I said, you know, the chapter can say all that he has to say, but how much proof? What is the reality about it? What have we seen? What in all the news and all the in the schools? What letters have gone out to parents? You know, where have we seen anything? Anything that is being said to address our children's challenges, what really came into place? What is in place for those who have gone through such a rough time under this 2 year of COVID, where the supposedly remote learning took place? What do we have? What facts do we have? That is the question. And we don't have answers because we don't even know who to go to get these answers. We don't have anybody that will help us, assist us in getting checks and balances pertaining to this whole situation. You know, the chancellor said there will be no more snow days because every child, according to him, will have a device for remote learning for every day that may appear to be snow day. Now we know it did not happen before, and we know it's not going to happen again. Everything is about talk. We don't have any facts or any implementation of anything that is happening. He talks about for the summer, over 100,000 children took part in so many different summer programs. I have never even seen a letter come to my house offering any program.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They maybe have their special places that this information go to. I don't know. But again, we have to find a way that we can get checks and balances. We really need to figure out how can we, when the chancellor says something, how do we follow up? How do we make sure that this is what is actually happening? This is, so I can't tell you that I saw anything to show that these different programs that he said he has put in place. I cannot vouch for that. I haven't seen anything mm-hmm. come into my home, and I do have I have a child in the public school. I have friends who have children in the public school. I have friends who have children with different challenges, and I haven't heard anything. Mm. I haven't heard anything from them. So again, we need to find a way to get some checks and balances in place as to when you say something, if it's taken place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Now, you folks got a website that has a lot of resources that people need to take advantage of, and that is nycmayoralcontrolnot.org. Let me repeat that again. nycmayoralcontrolnot.org. So that's NYC Mayoral Control, followed by N-O-T, that's all one word, .org. And there are a lot of resources there that people can go ahead and take advantage of. And that's the website of the New York City Coalition to Finally End Mayoral Control. What are other ways that...
One other thing I just want to mention, when you, as you mentioned there, the website, it's very important that folks know, once you go on that website, and you do an outreach to any of us, Brenda, myself, and the other members of this grassroots organization who believes that mayor control should end, you go on that website and you need any help in any way to address something within your children's school, feel free to do an outreach directly to us, and we will find a way to assist as much as possible. I just wanted to share that.
Okay. So now the contact information is on the website?
Yes. Everything is on the website.
Okay. Brenda, any final words before we get ready to move on?
Well, you know, my final thoughts is that this, our village really needs to come together, because we're in a system that, as Luper stated, you know, it's the same thing, same game. Nothing's changed. What is the budget could hit $50 billion, it's going to still be the same old game. So we're going to have to do something innovative to put together something that's going to bring our community together so that we can do what's best for our children. That's the only thing I can think of right
for
now.
For sure. Now, one of the things we know that's happening nationally is that white parents are being organized and weaponized, and that they're going to school board meetings, and they're talking about banning books and preventing their children from feeling bad about themselves by going ahead and changing curriculum and creating a curriculum which is a fantasy, which has nothing to do with the real history of the United States as it has happened. But, of course, this is something that's acceptable. And these white parents, as I said, are organized. They're being weaponized. Mm-hmm. They're being put out to go ahead and attack and impact school boards around the country. And in some of our major cities, black and Latino parents, Latinx parents, have no voice at all. They've been silenced. So in cities like New York, in Chicago, mayoral control, you know, it's just amazing. You know, how can people in legislatures around the country who are responsible for imposing these controls, this mayoral control system, how can they go ahead and allow black and brown parents to be silenced when white parents are being encouraged to, you know, do everything they can to go ahead and impact the education in their communities for their children. This makes absolutely no sense, but it's a reality.
It is the reality, but then, you know, it's sad that we sometimes have to compare and say, well, look at the Caucasian parents, what they are doing, and all parents of African descent are not doing it. It's sad that we have to even have to mention that. We have been blindsided for so many years, trusting a system that continues to fail our children, and so many parents whose children are succeeding, they're not paying attention to the bigger picture. They're not paying attention that our school system is really a school system set up as a pipeline to prison for young people. They're not paying attention to that because they feel if my child is succeeding, every other child should. And we know that that is not true, that some children need more resources, need more help than others. So how do we get our parents to understand that, as Brenda stated, it's a village. It is a village. We cannot say one person doing well in the village and the other isn't and is okay. So how do we get that information out there? That we need to end mayor control, that we need to take back our school system, that we need to find some community, big community schools. How do we get that out there to the point where we get in our parents to hear us?
Right.
So this
right.
is one of the ways, and we appreciate it so much that we are able to come on your station to share this. You know, mm-hmm. thank you so much again.
And thank you for always for taking the time to come on Education at the Crossroads. One of the things that I'm going to attempt to try to do is, you know, pull together, you know, some folks who are doing organizing in various places around the country so that they can share experiences, that, you know, they can share resources, and that maybe we can go ahead and recreate a national movement to go ahead and attempt to change this diabolical miseducation yes. system, because at this yes. particular point, that what it really is. All right, so
we only have each other.
We sure do. That's about it. Once again, in terms of the website, nycmayoralcontrolnot.org. NYC Mayoral Control, N-O-T, one word, NYC Mayoral Control Not.org for a lot of resources that are useful to parents, students, and community people. All right, Sister Muba, Sister Brenda, thank you very much for taking
thank
the time to
so
be
much.
On the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking again to you before too long.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Folks, you're listening
Saturday.
To... All right. Folks, you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. We know we've got listeners around the country, around the world. We're always happy to have them. And, of course, keep listening. But aside from listening, we want to, for you... to actually go ahead and donate to WBAI, and there are a number of ways to go ahead and do this. I've been telling people to go to the website, to go to WBAI.org, the website, and make a donation. WBAI in Pacifica is not in the best of fiscal financial shape right now. There are a lot of reasons why this is so. We've got to undertake a number of methods to try to go ahead and correct this. I, as a staff representative on the WBAI local station board, always attempt to try to come up with some ideas and things that people can go ahead and do. I think in the next week or two, we'll have some new ways for folks to interact with WBAI and to make donations in an attempt to try to keep WBAI and the larger Pacifica network alive. But for now, if you just go to WBAI.org, or for those of you who do not have access to the internet and these devices that so many of us see as being almost essential to our lives right now, you can go ahead and call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, and you can make a donation of any amount. You can become a sustaining member of WBAI, something we call a buddy, and an amount from $10 or more can be deducted from your checking account, your savings account. It can come from, you can write a check every month, you can use a credit card, you can do whatever best suits you and your financial situation. You can make a one-time donation, or you can become, as I said, a sustaining member, what has been called over the past years, a WBAI buddy. But at this particular point, it's important. If you want to continue the conversations that we've been having, then you should really, really go ahead and donate to WBAI. Right now, a little musical interlude, and we'll be right back with our next guest. A little bit of a tune that they're calling Blue World from a John Coltrane album titled Blue World, but it's not really Blue World, it's Out of This World, a Harold Arlen tune that John Coltrane and his quartet played quite a bit from in the middle 1960s. Tomorrow is John Coltrane's birthday, September 23rd. And this Saturday is going to be a John Coltrane festival from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. at Marcus Garvey Park in Harlem. Many of you know Marcus Garvey Park, right there, 5th Avenue, 124th Street. You know, those are entrances right there to go into the band shell there. and there's going to be a festival. With us right now, we've got the director of Jazzmobile, Robin Bell Stevens, and we've got the founder of the John Coltrane Festival, and also a founder of the New York Jazz Society, Dr. Mujib Manin. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having us on.
All right. I think it's important for a couple of reasons. You know, first of all, John Coltrane's birthday, which some radio stations around the nation actually go ahead and celebrate and have programs 24 hours or longer. As a matter of fact, I have to share a quick story. You know, my one of my early claims to fame here at WBAI is myself and two good friends of mine, Eddie Rhodes and Wayne Moreland. We put together a 16-hour John Coltrane program back in, oh, I guess that was like 1979. And, you know, we did a lot. We had live music. We had musicians in the studio. We had interviews with Miri Baraka. Oh, we did a lot of things. And we played some John Coltrane music that at the time was not necessarily that well known. And we kind of looked at some of his live performances, which in 1979, many people were not aware of. That's one of my first WBAI claims to fame. But not talking about myself and my John Coltrane experience, let's talk about the festival that's going to be taking place on Saturday. Let me start with Robin Bell Stevens, the director of Jazzmobile, and then Dr. Mujib Manin, we'll get to you. But Sister Robin, tell us about this festival and your involvement in it.
Yeah, well, actually, Jazzmobile was actually invited to become a part of this festival. We got a phone call initially from State Senator Cordell Claire's office saying that there was this program that she was doing on Saturday the 24th, and she wanted to do two things. She was very interested in celebrating jazz music, particularly in Harlem. Certainly Jazzmobile, who's been around for 58 years, presenting, you know, great music for free, as is the intent of our founders, Dr. Billy Taylor, Jimmy Heath, and Daphne Arnstein. But Senator Cordell Clear had a vision that she wanted to do a celebration, and she's now calling it the first annual Jazz Jam. And it came off an idea that she wanted to do a day to celebrate and to appreciate jazz. So it sort of morphed and changed into this. And then she also had reached out to, there was a conversation, certainly with Dr. Namam, and also with, I believe, someone that your listeners may know of, a guy by the name of Pips. I'm having a brain freeze all of a sudden. I'm sorry. Harlem Late Night Jazz. Sorry. Harlem Late Night Jazz also came to them and had this idea, and Dakota Phipps, who was the founder of that organization. And they invited Jazzmobile to become a part of it. They had chosen Saturday the 24th as the day they wanted to do it, and they wanted to do it in the park. Well, as anyone knows, most people know, if you want to do an event in the park in the city of New York, you have to have a permit to do that. And as luck would have it, Jazzmobile had a permit to do an event on the 24th. So that was how we originally got invited to come into it. But certainly Jazzmobile, as you and your listeners know, this is what we do. We provide free jazz programming throughout the city of New York, primarily in the summertime, through a festival called Summerfest, which is also New York City's longest-running jazz festival. And certainly someone has noteworthy as the phenomenal jazz master, John Coltrane, is very worthy of having a festival. And then when I learned more about it and learned that this was actually the 11th time it's being done, but it is in fact being called the premiere because this is the first time that it's being done in collaboration with the vision set forth by our state senator. And that's how we got to call it the premiere or the inaugural at John Coltrane Jazz Festival.
Okay. All right. Dr. Manin, why don't you talk about your involvement in this festival?
Well, for since around the past 10 years before, prior to this, we had the New York Jazz Society try to do a jazz festival honoring Coltrane, and we were successful on a very small scale. We did it at the Malcolm Shabazz Harlem Market, at Harlem Heritage Tours, Cleopatra's Needle, on the anniversary of his birthday. And we were looking to reach a larger audience because we needed to show that Coltrane is someone that we should not forget in our history. And if we forget to refresh a recollection of our history, great masters like that, we lose our cultural health and welfare of the people. So we're looking to get Central Park because we had an idea of bringing it to a larger audience. And through the good graces of Senator Clear and the collaboration of Harlem Late Night Jazz and the Jazzmobile, an opportunity opened up to bring it to a larger audience. And we're grateful for the help that we got and the participation of these wonderful organizations. And it's important because, not because, just because of John Coltrane, he was part of a larger movement. He is part of a larger movement to break out of the confines of the world that we live in, which is a mental confinement. We are walled in by ideas like the empire of color, colorism. We're walled in by how we perceive in a way that's undignified as a people. And so John Coltrane was a person whose musical ideas liberated us from the confines of Western music and liberated our minds to have a greater vision of our dignity and distinction as a people and to celebrate our history. So he's part of a movement that in the 60s is called the Black Arts Movement. It had impact all over the world on liberation movements. That movement was a reaction to the failure of the civil rights movement to confer dignity and distinction upon us and independence upon us as a people. And so his sound, his musical ideas liberated our minds to escape from that mental plantation and confinement. And that concept that he played and his musical concepts pollinated liberation movements all over the world, as did the works of Sonia Sanchez and Amir Barak and others. So much so that the Dalits in India, who are so-called untouchables, who are people of African descent, who are very dark, listen to that music. They read Amir Barak, and they use the African-American liberation as inspiration for their struggle against what's called the Varna, the color caste system of India. So this needs to be shared. These achievements that came through people like Coltrane and Amir Barak and Sonny Sanchez, it needs to be shared. You don't need to lose that history.
No question. Definitely no question. So now, Robin, what's going to be happening on Saturday? So people can know. We know that people in the WBAI listening audience will actually come out. I shared some information about the festival on social media a little earlier, and we'll do some more between now and Saturday, because we definitely want people to come out to this event. So what kinds of things are going to be taking place on Saturday?
Right. So as you said, it's going to be from 1 to 7, which is a bit of a long day, but we want your listeners to know and our audience to know that you can certainly come at 1:30 when the music will actually start, and we're kicking it off with the National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Master, Mr. Reggie Workman, who's also a former band member of the John Coltrane Quartet. So he's putting together his group, and they will play 1 hour of nonstop John Coltrane music. So that's going to be certainly an exciting opportunity, wonderful opportunity for people to hear the master Reggie Workman perform this great music. Then there'll be 3 other groups after that, and they'll be broken up in such a way that each set will be anywhere from about an hour to 90 minutes long, and the entire day will be nothing but the wonderful music of Coltrane. Some of the other artists that are going to be performing along with Reggie Workman are Patience Higgins, Bill Saxton, E.K. Blue,
And as you can tell, one thing they all have in common is they all play saxophone. Because obviously we definitely want to acknowledge the mastery of John Coltrane with these great artists as well. And then to mix it up a little bit, there'll be a vocalist and there'll be a tap master, Omar Edwards, who is phenomenal on tap. And one of the things that we enjoy, Jazz of West presented him before, and one of the things about Omar is that, you know, he, I dare say, would probably agree, we consider his tap actually another percussion instrument. That's exactly how he performs when he does tap. So that's going to be another exciting thing. And then we have additional musicians that are going to be, as I say, throughout the day. And again, it's going to be, what's exciting is that you can come and stay for the entire day. We're going to be advertising tomorrow. I know Gazmobile is going to be doing an e-blast, as will other partners, announcing the run of the show. So that way, again, we realize 7 hours is a long day, but if you want to come to hear a particular artist, you'll be able to find that out. You can also find it on www.jazzmobile.org. We'll be posting it there, in addition to doing our e-blast to let folks know who's going to be performing and when. But I want to also just say that these wonderful artists that we're putting together, it was a bit of a collaboration, but Dr. Mujib Manan really spearheaded that. So let him tell you a little bit more about the artist.
Sure.
Well, you know, what's exciting, and this is a sort of a dream, I have five titans on the tenor saxophone playing and making giant steps. That's a rare thing nowadays. You know, you have five of the best guys in the local area. So we'll be collaborating on tunes like Giant Steps and Tenor Madness. And to see that, reminds me of the old days they have in New Orleans when we first started out with these cutting sessions. And in Harlem, we had two or three piano players in the same room, Art Tatum and Errol Garner and others. So to see five of our best playing and interpreting Coltrane from different perspectives, it's going to be something you won't forget. And then to have, we have some great women artists that, you know, who are instrumentalists that we're part of it also. The whole mix of dance and voice, the daughter of Johnny Hartman, Laurie Hartman will be there. Dance, voice, and instruments together in celebration of the work of John Coltrane, his liberation work, will be something that should not be missed. And it's something that does not occur very often. And I won't say once in a lifetime, but we plan to do this hopefully many times. But it's the beginning. It's the first baby steps towards a giant step.
Okay. All right.
And I think that I think that this is also, you know, what he was just saying is going to make this festival a little different than some festivals that we have seen done where you're paying homage and tribute to a particular artist. Whereas the music that's going to be performed is going to be Coltrane's music, right? It'll be reimagined, reinterpreted by these great artists who have been inspired by him. Some of them obviously had the good fortune of working with him, like a Reggie Workman. But I think that this is what's also going to make it so unique, and that it's going to be Coltrane, all Coltrane, nothing but Coltrane. Maybe a little bit of his favorite tune mixed up in there as well. But basically, it's going to be a musical tribute in the purest form.
How can people get further information about this?
So you can certainly go to, again, the Jazzmobile website at www.jazzmobile.org. We have on our calendar, we've listed some more information there. We're also going to have we're adding some links to some of the artists that are going to be performing, so you can get a flavor of what they do, and also some of our favorite tunes by Coltrane. You can click on there and you can get more information there as well. But again, the important thing to remember is that in the tradition of what we like to do in the park, all of the concerts are free. And so you can, as I say, you can get 7 hours of free music. And you just come to, as you said earlier, Marcus Garvey Park, enter at 5th Avenue and 124th Street. And we're encouraging people, you know, to come early, because you definitely want to be there at 1:30 when Mr. Reggie Workman and his group take to the bandstand.
Okay. Would would like to say that Baba Reggie Workman is a friend and has been on this program a number of times, as has TK Blue. So, listen, this is just consistent with some of the things that we try to do on a regular basis. So I would like to thank you, too, for being here this evening and spreading the word about the John Coltrane Festival, Marcus Garvey Park, this Saturday, which is September 24th from 1 until 7. And right now we're going to go out with some John Coltrane music. We will go back to Blue World, which, as I said, is not really Blue World. It's Out of This World, originally written by Harold Arlen, but restructured and I guess we could say deconstructed and reconstructed by John Coltrane and his quartet.
Nice. Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. And
thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Have a good night.
Good night.
Nice.
So, you've been listening to Education at the Crossroads. My name is Basirim Chawi. Next week, I'll be off. I'll be moving around the country and around the world. But the following week, October 6th, I'll be back with Congressman Jamal Bowman from the 16th Congressional District in New York State. Somebody who's been called part of the squad. Anyway, everyone, stay well. Come out to the John Coltrane Festival this Saturday, Marcus Garvey Park in Harlem. Peace.
Marcia Pendleton, producer and host of Backstage Stories on WBAI New York. We are thrilled to welcome Harriet D. Foy from the hit star show P-Valley and award-winning artist Germano Toussaint to the program. We'll talk about their careers and their musical collaboration and its first single, La-Di-Da. Don't miss this conversation with these multi-hyphenate powerhouses on Thursday, September 22nd at 9 p.m. on the next Backstage Stories.
Conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa this Friday, September 23rd at 3 p.m. I'm Johanna Fernandez, and I'll talk to Maria Hinojosa about the adaptation for young readers of her memoir, Once I Was You, Finding My Voice, and Passing the Mic. Maria Hinojosa is host of Latino USA, distributed by NPR for 27 years, and by PRX since 2020. On the occasion of Latino History Month, I'll talk to her about Latino culture and politics, and we'll open the phone lines. Tune in to my exclusive interview with Maria Hinojosa, Friday, September 23rd at 3 p.m. See you then. Este canto.